That's hit well, left center field. Rosario with a long run back, still back, gone! Whit Merrifield has a three-hit game. That's a two-run home run. And now the Royals are down by one in the seventh inning.
Whit Merrifield with the two-run homer, and the Royals did cut it to one in the seventh, but had golden opportunities in the eighth and ninth, but couldn't come through in the clutch. Kind of been the story throughout the year with their offense. Royals get swept in Minnesota. Lucas Duda also goes deep for KC. Danny Duffy's road streak snapped in a loss to the Twins. He had six straight road starts where he allowed just one earned run total, which was the first American League pitcher in the live ball era to do that. But Duffy was greeted by a grand slam. Excuse me, I had to sneeze there. Grand slam early in the ball game, and he ends up taking a loss. He's now 7-10. Lucas Duda was the 10th homer of the year off of former Royal Irvin Santana. The Royals fall to the Twins 6-5. Jacob Junis takes the hill for KC tonight when they face the Cubs at Kauffman Stadium. Cole Hamels, the newly acquired Cole Hamels, he was with the Rangers. Royals are familiar with him, making a second start for the Cubs. 7:15 is the first pitch tonight in KC as the Royals just trying to play out the string and go from there. But that's all you can say with the Royals right now. We know they're not going to go to the playoffs unless they would win the rest of their games. And I think we're pretty confident that that's not going to happen. But there are some good things, believe it or not, with the Royals. And that is, with the trade of Mike Moustakas, they got a guy that seems to be, the early returns, very promising in Brett Phillips, who is a guy that they had wanted for a while, who was kind of, it was a backlog of outfielders there in Milwaukee, and now he's getting an opportunity in Kansas City. He has showed off his defense. He looks like Lorenzo Cain Jr. out there, diving and making plays. He has a much better arm than Cain, as he's gone down a few at the plate already. And the one against the White Sox was very impressive, moving to his left and gathering himself good footwork. He's hit a home run for the Royals. So there's that. Ryan O'Hearn hit his first career homer after he got called up when Chester Cuthbert went to the 60-day DL. So there are some things to perhaps be positive about in the future for the Royals, but the Royals are 34-77 on the season and still a half game better than Baltimore for the number one draft pick. Darn Orioles! Darn it, Baltimore. Why do you have to do that to us? So the Royals will be back in action and get to the Cubs. That will probably draw some fans, I would imagine, to the K as the Royals continue to play out the string, as I call it, 34-77. And it's not a matter of how many games behind first place Cleveland. It's how many games are they out of fourth place, which is seven. So if you're thinking, well, the Royals, you know, that'd be pretty cool if they don't finish dead last. It's not looking very good.
They looked like they were going to catch the White Sox when they won the first two there.
Yeah.
And then they lost, and now they've lost three more in a row.
So I have a couple of questions about the Royals before we move on to some happier things and more optimistic things. First of all, what do you think the future holds for Hunter Dozier? To me, the Royals aren't very confident about Hunter Dozier, and I felt that way when he could have been on the big league roster to start the year.
Yeah.
And to me, the acquisition of Lucas Duda told me they didn't think he was ready.
Yeah.
And then he got hurt, and they brought him up, hit a couple of homers, but now Ryan O'Hearn's getting a chance at first. It's almost like, you know, Hunter, we've seen enough. Let somebody else see what they can do, Ryan O'Hearn, and we'll go from there. He's a pinch hitter yesterday. You know, he's a guy that was a high draft pick. He's 26 years of age, and so far he, at least he's had a cup of tea in the big leagues, but so far you have to say he's a bust, and that's another failed draft pick by the Royals organization.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he should have been up definitely at the start of the season, like you said, but probably even before that. I mean, what they wanted out of him. But again, he's dealt with some injuries too in the past. I think that probably halted a little bit of that, like the timing of when he could come up. But yeah, I don't know. You're not getting out of him what you expect with that high of a pick.
Bust so far. Why is Lucas Duda still on the Royals?
I have no idea. I honestly, the way he started hitting there toward the break, or toward the trade deadline, I honestly thought somebody might take a flyer on him and he'd get traded.
He could still clear waivers and they could trade him, but if somebody claims him, then that's possible too. I don't understand that one. Lucas Duda doesn't figure in the long-term plan of the Royals. I'd rather, even though Duda hit a homer yesterday, I'd rather have Ryan or Hearn or Hunter Dozier play first base.
Yeah.
Or let him platoon. I don't care. But I don't need to see Lucas Duda. I know what he is. Major League Baseball standing updates. What has happened to the Yankees? Red Sox are 9.5 games ahead of the Yankees. They swept the Yankees over the weekend. 79-34, best record in baseball, the Red Sox. Cleveland has a 9-game lead in the American League Central because the American League Central stinks.
Mm-hmm.
Minnesota, second-place team, and they're 6 games under 500, and that's after a 3-game sweep of the Royals. Houston with a 4-game lead over Oakland, and Seattle is now 6.5 back. So Oakland has jumped Seattle in the standings since I went on vacation. Philadelphia, 1.5-game lead over Atlanta. The Nationals hanging around down by 6 games. The Cubs with a 1-game lead over Milwaukee. First-place Cubs against last-place Royals tonight at the K. St. Louis, 6.5 back, fired their manager recently. In Pittsburgh, 7.5 back, but they picked up Chris Archer in a trade. Arizona and the Dodgers are tied atop the National League West. Colorado just 2 games back, and the Giants are right there, 5 games back as well. Are you confused, or what's going on here?
No, you're good.
Okay,
you're good.
All right. You look very perplexed. San Francisco, 5 games back, so they're still a threat in the National League West, but... I just don't get into the playoffs as much because the Royals aren't a team that's contending, unfortunately. But at least I knew that early on, that they weren't going to be a contender. In fact, knew that before spring training even started. Okay, moving on to something a little bit more optimistic, and that is the Kansas City Chiefs. Their preseason opener will be this Thursday, which you can hear on Z96.3 Lake against the Houston Texans. And we'll get our first look at the new quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes. We saw him against the Denver Broncos last game of the regular season a year ago. And he looked good, but he went against some backup players for Denver, but he also had a lot of backup players he was working with in that game. He didn't have Travis Kelce or Tyreek Hill or Kareem Hunt, except for one carry. Didn't have his regular offensive line. He has a lot of weapons going into the season this year, and a lot of the talk early on about Mahomes, the concern for Patrick Mahomes, of course, interceptions, turnovers, because Alex Smith was a guy that checked it down last year, threw the ball deeper more often and with pretty good accuracy, and yet he still would panic and run and give up on looking downfield. That was one of the things I couldn't stand about Alex Smith. I really liked Alex Smith, great person, good quarterback, not a great quarterback. I'm sorry, I'm not calling him a great quarterback. A good quarterback. Great quarterbacks win playoff games and should have won last year and couldn't score a point in the second half. Is that Andy Reid's fault? At Alex Smith's fault? I don't know, but there's many times Alex Smith would just tuck his head and run and not continue to look downfield. Mahomes will continue to look down the field. Will he make some mistakes? Absolutely. He's had quite a few interceptions at training camp. Andy Reid, the head coach of the Chiefs, his thoughts on Mahomes and the picks in St. Joe.
No, he's been doing a great job. You know, I know people wrote about the interceptions. I told you at the beginning of camp, I don't care about all that stuff. I want him to test the offense. It's so important. It's so important that we give him a ton of plays. I want him testing it. If you don't have the intestinal fortitude to go test it, you're going to be one of these quarterbacks that checks it down every time. And that's not what it's all about.
I like to hear that. I do. Because if you're going to get rid of Alex Smith and you make Patrick Mahomes a check down quarterback, then why did you get rid of Alex Smith?
Yeah, exactly.
So Patrick Mahomes says it's about learning now so he can be ready for the season.
This year we're ready to go. I mean, we're ready to go. We have a great team. We're trying to make a run at it. And so for me, I'm trying to learn all that stuff I can in practice and in the preseason so that whenever the season comes around, I'm ready to go. And I'm not going to be trying to make those mistakes in the game. I'm going to be trying to really focus in on being efficient and putting us in the best play and hopefully making a lot of big plays and winning a lot of football games.
One of the things I think is kind of lost when people are trying to figure out what Patrick Mahomes will do this year is that he has a year in the system. Two, he has a tremendous offensive team around him, so he doesn't have to throw the ball all the time. He can hand it off. The Chiefs don't have to be predictable. They're not going to be in third and long all the time. He's not going to be like Troy Aikman on a horrible Dallas Cowboy team or Peyton Manning on a horrible Indianapolis Colts team. Patrick Mahomes has one of the best running backs in football. He has, I would say, the best tight end in football. He has one of the best receivers in football in Tyreek Hill, and he also has a pretty talented receiver in Sammy Watkins. And so really that takes some of the pressure off Patrick Mahomes. He doesn't have to do everything.
We have a really good team, and so it kind of takes some of the pressure off me with how good the team that we have and the weapons I have around me, that I just have to put the ball in their hands. I don't have to necessarily do everything for the team. I don't have to try to carry the team on my own. I have a lot of good teammates that will help make my job a lot easier.
Mahomes could put up some big numbers this year, but it sounds to me that Mahomes is only worried about one stat. That's winning.
It doesn't really matter where, what the stats and all the different accolades that you can collect. I mean, if you're a winner in this league, you can play for a long time and have a lot of success. So I just want to go out there every single week and try to win and try to make a run in the playoffs and try to get the Super Bowl and win it.
That's what you like to hear. The Chiefs practiced yesterday, and some of the observations of practice. They have a season ticket member day, so it was all kind of autographs. Reggie Ragland back on the field, practiced for the first time at training camp after dealing with a few bumps and bruises. Andy Reid said it was a pretty good day on Sunday. Chris Jones continues to provide energy to the Chiefs' defense. And another observation that was written here by on KCChiefs.com, some of the top plays or players from Sunday. Steven Nelson continues to have a great camp. That's good news for the Chiefs secondary because they need somebody to come through. And Byron Pringle, K-State standout receiver, had another good day yesterday. Had a phenomenal one-handed catch for a touchdown during the one-on-one portion of practice early on Sunday. And it's becoming a trend that he's going to make some sort of highlight-worthy play at some point during every practice. Also, rookie cornerback Tremont Smith had some good things yesterday at practice with a nice pass breakup. And Patrick Mahomes, that's the guy everybody wants to talk about. Chiefs fans do, and rightfully so. They're excited about him. He only threw one pick and threw about 100 footballs yesterday, and he did not throw any picks in first-string offense versus first-string defense. So it's all part of a process. And, you know, if fans are going to get all riled up and worried about Patrick Mahomes throwing picks at training camp, I would be really concerned if Patrick Mahomes hadn't thrown a pick in training camp, because that would mean that he's taking the safe route. And I've said all along, I want Patrick Mahomes to be Patrick Mahomes. They might have to reel him in a little bit every once in a while, but the reason they drafted him was not to make him check down Charlie. So I'm all for letting the horse run. You kind of break him a little bit, but he's still got some of that wild oats to sow. I'm okay with the Chiefs finding out now. I always go back to the Royal spring training. Zach Greinke had a horrible spring training. And there are people talking about Zach Greinke. What's wrong with Zach Greinke? And Greinke ended up winning the Cy Young that year and had an unbelievable start to the season. And Greinke said, spring training, I'm not worried about numbers. Spring training is the chance to experiment, work on different pitches, different arm angles, this and that. And Greinke is one of the most astute guys you'll ever meet when it comes to baseball. Mm-hmm. He's a little bit of an odd duck somewhat socially, but that's okay. And he used it as a chance to experiment. That's what training camp is for Patrick Mahomes this year. And you heard it from Andy Reid. We got to find out what he can or cannot do. We're going to push the envelope. We're not worried about the interceptions right now. Makes sense to me.
Yeah, you haven't even played a game yet. So it's like, I'm with you. Like, what if Patrick Mahomes went through training camp throwing no interceptions, one or two interceptions? He's probably going to feel a little bit better about himself than what he really is. You know, he's going to feel confident, maybe overconfident, mm-hmm. and think that he can just go out and do it. And then at the first sign of trouble, right. You know, and he throws two picks against the Texans coming up on Thursday, and then he starts freaking out. Like, this is perfect for him. Like, it's all the things that he's saying, all the things that Andy Reid is saying, is a perfect learning experience for him of what he can and can't do during a game. So you take that and you understand, I made a mistake here during practice. I can't do that in this game here. I've got to make sure I make the right read on this play or you know, don't force something in that's not there. Right. And you learn it in camp. I mean, that's what it's for everybody, not just Patrick Mahomes. It's for everybody to make the mistakes and learn from the mistakes that they've made, because nobody's going to be perfect. And hopefully this is also a time for the defense to make mistakes and learn from their mistakes too. Just overall, the whole team. And Patrick Mahomes is obviously part of that.
Chiefs preseason opener on Thursday against the Texans. And I am worried the Chiefs are going to have some significant injury, whether it be a preseason game or at training camp. I'm worried about that. And I just hope it doesn't happen to Patrick Mahomes. You talk about deflating a season before it would begin if he gets hurt. It'd be interesting to see how Andy Reid uses Mahomes in the final preseason game. Many times he'll rest his starters, but Mahomes needs reps. So, and then what happens if he gets hurt in the final preseason game? Well, why did you play him? Well, he needs reps. He's my first-year starting quarterback. Patrick Mahomes would like to be a Hall of Famer, and if he is a Hall of Famer, then the Chiefs probably are going to win a Super Bowl or at least make it to a Super Bowl. That would be my guess.
Yeah.
And the Hall of Fame induction class of 2018. We had the ceremonies over the weekend. By the way, we already have preseason football. That's in the books. And, of course, the Chiefs opener on Thursday, as I mentioned, on ZNI 6.3 Lake. This year's Hall of Fame induction players, former players, Bobby Bethard actually was a former GM. Linebacker Robert Brazil, safety Brian Dawkins, guard Jerry Kramer, linebacker Ray Lewis, wide receiver Randy Moss, wide receiver Terrell Owens, and linebacker Brian Urlacher. They all gave some really good speeches. Of course, T.O. Was in Chattanooga, Tennessee, is where he had his first person to be alive and be inducted to the Hall of Fame and say thanks, but no thanks. T.O. wanted to set the record straight on why he wasn't in Canton.
Many of you may be wondering why we're here instead of Canton. There's been a lot of speculation and false reports as to why I chose not to be there. I would like to set the record straight. It's not because how many times it took for me to be voted into the hall. It's about the mere fact that the sports writers are not in alignment with the mission and core values of the Hall of Fame. These writers disregarded the system, the criteria, and bylaws in which guys are inducted, and ultimately the true meaning of the Hall of Fame and what it represents. I wanted to take a stand so the next guy coming after me will not have to go through what I and others have gone through. Whether it's 3 years or 45 years, you should get what you rightfully earned.
Your thoughts on Terrell Owens and what he said? You know, it's interesting. He had a 39 or 36-minute speech, and I liked how he closed it. It was very, very well done. If you were this or that or overlooked or this or that, stand up. And at the end of the thing, everybody was standing up. And he didn't talk about himself hardly at all. It was about thanking everybody. He mentioned every single one of the Hall of Fame inductees by name, but he wasn't with at Canton, Ohio. I've said it before. I don't have a problem with T.O. doing what he did at all. I mean, he's the one that earned his way into the Hall of Fame. I have no problem with him having it somewhere else. I still think someday he's going to regret not being in Canton. But if he feels strongly about it, he said he had thought about going to Canton and he felt like, I'm just going to be a fake. And I applaud him for not being a fake, being who he is. I applaud him for that. But your thoughts on him talking about the writers and this and that he's kind of standing up for future possible Hall of Famers. Do you buy that, or do you think this is T.O. being T.O.?
I don't think it's black or white, one or the other. I think it's some of everything in between that. It's T.O. being T.O. There's no question about that. I mean, that's the first thing that comes to people's mind. Oh, he's not going to Canton. Sour grapes is T.O. being T.O. I do think he's right. I mean, I don't think it should have taken three times for him to get in there. No, I love how he says at the beginning, it's not about taking three times, but basically it is, because it's the people that voted for him are the reason it took three times. Right. So he's talking about the reason it took three times, but saying it's not because it took three times. Right. I agree with him. I think T.O. got hurt because of his reputation and the way he handled himself while he was playing. But if you look at his numbers, there's no reason it should have taken three times for him to get to the Hall of Fame, just by numbers alone. And I know that championship might be part of that. Maybe some of the writers were looking at that, too, about the rings that he doesn't have. I don't know. But I really think based on where he ranks as a wide receiver in NFL history, which is second in yards and obviously top 10 in touchdowns and as well, and you know, I think his numbers were good enough possibly to get him in on the first ballot.
Well,
but I don't think he's – basically, I'd say I don't think he's wrong in feeling the way he feels is what I'm saying.
Well, he can feel any which way he wants.
Yeah.
There's no wrong or right thing in that one, I don't think. But here's my thing, and we've talked about these two players specifically in the NBA, okay? And Terrell Owens has, honestly, he's done more than Carmelo Anthony and Dwight Howard have.
Oh, sure.
But do you – Should it always be about just numbers to be in the Hall of Fame? Because do you think Carmelo Anthony should be in the Hall of Fame when he's won one playoff series his entire career and has been a cancer to almost every organization he's gone to? Do you think Carmelo Anthony, because he has the numbers, I mean, Dwight Howard, he's not a defensive player, he's a one-way player. You got Dwight Howard, who's got a whole bunch of numbers and has balanced, what was it, seven or eight organizations now we've talked about. He thinks his resume speaks for itself. He hasn't done anything significant in his career in regards to winning championships. But those guys will probably be first ballot Hall of Famers. Why?
Well, I mean, Melo is a first ballot Hall of Famer
Because
it's not
numbers?
The Pro Basketball Hall of Fame. It's the Basketball Hall of Fame. So I think part of what he did in college is gonna improve his chances of being a first ballot Hall of Famer, and he does have the numbers. If you look at some of the guys that have been first ballot Hall of Famers in the NBA, I don't think that Melo's going to have any problem being a first ballot Hall of Famer. I just really don't, because it's not the Pro Basketball Hall of Fame. It's the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
So I really don't,
Dwight Howard did nothing in college. He went straight from high school to pro. Dwight Howard didn't go to college.
No, and I'm not talking about Dwight Howard.
Well, I know, but let's talk about Dwight Howard. Okay, so you're going to say Carmelo's in. What about Dwight Howard?
You know, his numbers aren't as good as Melo's, I don't think, as far as.
Well, his rebounding numbers are out of the
stratosphere. Well, the rebounds are obviously
block shots. He was a defensive player, and Carmelo wasn't.
Yeah.
So is Dwight going to be punished because he was more of a complete player than Carmelo?
I don't know. And I don't know that he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer or not, but I mean he could be. Basically, there's a lot of guys that you don't expect probably would be.
But should we be judging players? Should we be judging players based on just numbers?
I don't.
If you play, if you play in the Major League Baseball for 20 years, and you get about 140 hits a year, which is not a great season.
Yeah.
That means you almost had 3,000 hits. So because you were in the league for 20 years, that automatically makes you a Hall of Famer because you're able to accrue numbers? I'm just asking.
Yeah, and baseball is the toughest judge on all that stuff. You've seen that historically where the writers in baseball are probably tougher than any of these writers and people that are letting people into their Hall of Fame. But, I mean, I'm just kind of basing it on some of the people you see in the Hall of Fame today. And I'm really confident that Carmelo's a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Oh, I think so, too.
Yeah. But now, Dwight Howard, I don't know. I'm not 100% confident, and it might sound weird to say that.
But if Carmelo acted like Terrell Owens, would he be a first ballot Hall of Famer? I would say no.
Yeah.
So what we're saying is the writers are saying it's about your numbers, but it's about your character. Isn't that part of being a Hall of Famer? And there's where I disagree with Terrell Owens a little bit. He thinks he should be the first ballot Hall of Famer. Well, yeah, your numbers are tremendous. But you also had teams that didn't want you around anymore because, as I say about Carmelo, you're a cancer in the locker room. You're a cancer on the sideline.
Yeah.
Dez Bryant's got some really good numbers, and if he kept up long enough, he might be a Hall of Famer. You think Dez Bryant's a Hall of Fame player or character? The guy, the Cowboys cut him loose. He's played hurt, no question. Terrell Owens played hurt, too. But Dez Bryant's always yelling and screaming on the sideline, making it tough on his quarterback. And he's got players now coming out saying, dude, he needed to be a leader. Instead, it was all about him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but if he would continue to have the numbers he put up early in his career, he'd be a Hall of Famer based on numbers. But does that mean you're a Hall of Famer just because of numbers? If you're on a bad – you can be on a bad team in any sport and put up lots of numbers.
Sure.
So you're a Hall of Famer because you're on a bad team and you put up a lot of numbers? To me, a Hall of Famer should make – the team around them better. You should be an integral part of a team that at least gets close to a championship every once in a while if you're that great of a player. And I think sometimes we put the bar is too low on who we put in the Hall of Fame.
Oh,
I think the numbers need to be higher. Carmelo Anthony, to me, is he a Hall of Famer? Yeah, statistically he is. Is Dwight Howard a Hall of Famer? Statistically he is. Is Terrell Owens a Hall of Famer? Statistically he is. But winning is pretty important, too. The way you conduct yourself as a person and as an athlete, I think that's important. And so when Terrell Owens wants to get mad about sports writers not putting him in until the third ballot, he should feel fortunate enough he got put in because he could easily have not been put in at all. And then he makes kind of a circus out of it a little bit by doing his own thing, which, like I said, I respect and somewhat admire. He did what he wanted to do for his induction ceremony. That's fantastic. But you kind of brought it on yourself, T.O. Not kind of,
oh,
you did.
Sure, yeah.
You
There's
did.
No
so
doubt about that.
So you can. So are you really sticking up for the future Hall of Fame, possible Hall of Fame players? Or are you just sticking up for guys that are like you, flamboyant, going out on the star at Dallas Cowboys Stadium, at Texas Stadium, you know, doing a Sharpie and signing footballs, yelling at your quarterbacks on the sideline, like Dez Bryant's done? Are those the guys you're stepping up for and saying that you're representing here, what you just said in your speech that we just heard the soundbite? Or are you talking about all Hall of Famers in general? Because I'm going to tell you, if you're a Hall of Famer that has the numbers T.O. has, and you didn't have the baggage that T.O. created, he would have been a first ballot Hall of Famer. Yeah, there's no question.
I don't dispute that.
So whose fault is it? Yeah. He's blaming the sports writers, which I'm not saying sports writers are the smartest people in the world. Sometimes they have a vendetta. It's ridiculous that nobody has ever been a unanimous selection to the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. That's ridiculous. It's stupid. But at the same time, the sports writers put him in. Why does it matter so much the first, second, or third year you got in? You got in. They decided to put you in. You got in. I guess I just don't quite fully understand how he's really sticking up for all these future Hall of Fame players.
I don't agree with that part of it. I mean, he's sticking up for Dez Bryant. That's who he's sticking up for.
Yeah,
sticking
really.
Up for Ocho Cinco.
Odell Beckham Jr.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just guys that are flamboyant like him.
Yes.
That's who he's sticking up for. He's sticking up for the guys that went through basically the same path that he's gone through.
Right.
And if they have trouble and kind of bring some of that on themselves,
mm-hmm.
then that's who he's sticking up for. You know, like I said, I'm not saying that I completely agree with where he's coming from, but I know where he's coming from.
I understand where he's coming from. I don't agree with it.
Yeah.
From that standpoint.
Because, I mean, if I'm sitting here saying I have the second most receiving yards in the history of this game. And I know it's not about one stat, but that's where I see where he's coming from. That's where I understand where he feels that they should have put him in a little bit earlier. Which, I mean, like I said, it's only three times. It's not like it was Art Monk that, you know, waited forever. And guys like that that are just sitting here waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. And it never happens or it finally happens. You know, it was two other times that he was on the ballot and he got in. So I'm kind of like in the middle. Like I said, I'm like, I understand where he's coming from, but I don't feel sorry for him. Like,
I don't either.
Not
because
at all.
If you really want to fight for somebody, it'd be the fact that you never did get put in the Hall of Fame. Then there's a reason for you to whine and bellyache.
Yeah. So I could use a comparison here, and I realize that it's different. They're different people, and that's why I'm using this comparison. Like Tony Gonzalez. You talk about winning should mean something. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have a ring.
Nope.
But he's got the numbers, all the numbers he needs to get to the Hall of Fame. Tony Gonzalez will be a first ballot Hall of Famer. I'm very confident in that.
Right.
And he's coming up this next year. This next February is when he'll probably get the call saying you're a Hall of Famer. But Tony Gonzalez was not T.O.
He was a class act.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Handed the ball to
the difference is that Tony Gonzalez is more well known as a guy that was a team player.
Mm-hmm.
He understood what it meant to be a professional. And never had any of those kind of issues. I mean, he had personal issues, I think, with Carl Peterson and the Chiefs. But other than that, I mean,
he didn't
on
make
the field,
himself bigger
he didn't
than
make a spectacle of everything that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's going to be a first ballot guy.
And that should be factored in. And that's why I think the writers get that part right.
Yeah.
I think they have a right to say, hey, you know what, T.O., you weren't all about the team. Tony Gonzalez was. Great numbers. You have great numbers. We're going to put him first year he's in. And T.O., you got to wait a little bit.
Yeah.
So you had to wait a little bit. Patience is a virtue, right?
Yeah.
You're in.
That's
you're
like,
in the Hall of Fame. You have your gold jacket.
It's not like you sat around and waited for 10 years before you got in.
Which some guys do.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that was T.O. Now, lost in all that, of course, was the speeches of other guys like Randy Moss talking about, and he... By the way, I saw your Twitter poll. I think Randy Moss, I think Terrell Owens was a more complete player, but I think the best pure wide receiver, if you had to choose between the two, is Randy Moss.
Yeah, I agree.
Because Randy Moss changed the way defenses played against him. Terrell Owens didn't have that blazing speed. He had good speed, but Randy Moss could just, because of his height and his speed and his athleticism, I mean, he drew so much attention every single play. Now, he loafed at times. And you could argue Terrell Owens should be a first ballot Hall of Famer, maybe Randy Moss not, because Terrell maybe I remember Moss loafing more than Owens.
There's reasons that I could say Randy Moss shouldn't have been.
I agree.
A first ballot Hall of Famer.
I agree.
If you're doing that to T.O.,
yep.
He was not like the early, model citizen of the NFL.
Early on in his career, it was all about him too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And even late, it was. I mean, Randy Moss.
He never won a Super Bowl.
He was about Randy Moss. You know.
He was. He was. It probably helped him a lot. He went to the Patriots. Here's Moss on being into the Hall of Fame.
What this jacket means to me, Mama, it was not about me. You taught me that. What did I say in the 30 for 30? Randy, it's not all about you. Mama, I understand. The family over there, that's who I had to provide for. I had to go get it for us.
Also inducted in the Hall of Fame was Brian Dawkins, outstanding defensive player for the Philadelphia Eagles. And he talked about his struggles. A lot of people talk about CTE or talk about the physical toll that football puts on your body, especially professional football players. And Brian Dawkins has had to deal with depression and suicide. And here's Dawkins talking about the other side.
The majority of success that I have had have come on the back end of pain. Pain has pushed me to levels unknown. For me at the time, all I know that was pain, but on the other side of it, all of a sudden, I became better in an area. So when we go through those situations in our lives, pain helps you develop those things that is going to take you to the next level of whatever it is the Lord has for you. Believe that. I'm a living testimony of that.
Brian Dawkins, inducted into the NFL Hall of Fame over the weekend. All right, before we get to Ohio State situation, this is interesting. I found this on Twitter. LeBron James, well, President Trump had a not too flattering remark about LeBron James. And listen, if you're a Trump supporter or not, if you can't recognize some of the mean-spirited things that are put out there by our president, then you're just, I don't want to say you're brainwashed, but, you know, you have to be objective. Try to be objective. And if you don't think it's a big deal what President Trump says about certain people here and there with his tweets, just imagine if it's your son or your daughter and your president said that about you. The comment that the President Trump made basically insinuated that LeBron was an idiot. He was dumb. There are other people, and LeBron has criticized the president. He's called the president a bum. He's quoted as saying he's a bum. Yet there are other athletes that have been critical of the president, and the president hasn't made comments about those people. So there seems to be some inconsistency there, or some people believe there is consistency there. You can connect the dots any which way you want. I don't want to make this a political show. But here's something about LeBron. LeBron is not dumb. LeBron is one of the most astute, one of the smartest guys in the history of sports. And he has done nothing, but he has not gotten in trouble off the court. He's not been arrested. He hasn't done the stuff that T.O.'s done or Randy Moss did. No. LeBron James is a model citizen, at least up to this point, as far as we know. LeBron James just opened, Promises School in his hometown.
Promise School, yeah.
And giving back to his community. I don't think dumb people do that. And he's done a lot of good things. So what the president probably should have done is said, congratulations or way to go, LeBron, on doing what you've done. The president chose not to go that route. Some people may listen to that comment and say, all right, that's a political comment because, you know, LeBron, you know, he's criticized the president. Well, you have the right in this country to criticize your political officials. You can. You can criticize your mayor of your town. You can criticize your city council, county commissioners. You can criticize your governor, your senator, and you can criticize your president. That's the great country we live in. We have the right to do that. We can say this and say that. Usually your president doesn't get back into a trade of war of words. That's the one thing that's unique about President Trump is that he's not afraid to speak his mind or sometimes maybe goes over the top. Depends on your viewpoint as to what he does.
And he has all the same rights that you just
said. And right, yeah. Exactly. And the president has the
Whether
right
to... believe it or
exactly.
agree with it or
You're
not.
Exactly
I mean,
right.
He can do it.
Many people don't think that's presidential way of doing things.
No,
but that's,
and I agree with that.
He's his own person.
Yeah.
And he hasn't really changed before he was in office and now that he's in office. And you can take that as a compliment or a slam, whichever way you want to look at it. Depends on your view of President Trump. But LeBron is a very smart guy. And here's LeBron. This was some audio cut talking to, I believe, his son's basketball team or teammates. I don't know for sure. This is LeBron talking about playing on a team. Listen to this advice. You young people out there, this is really good advice.
We got Hall of Famers and some of the best players that ever played a game came off the bench or didn't play. That don't mean you ain't good. There's guys in the NBA that don't play. Does that mean they're not good? They got to the NBA because they were sorry?
Mm-mm.
They're just playing a role. If you don't want to roll, play tennis or play golf. Because then you can do what the fuck you want to do. And then you got nobody else to blame because it's only an individual sport. If that's what you want to do, play tennis or play golf. But if you want to play a team sport, there's going to be things that you got to give up to get what you want.
He's absolutely right. I've said this for years, even when I was in school, that if you are a person that is on a team and you continuously blame others for your failures, you need to quit the sport. Go play tennis. Go play golf. Go play ping pong. Go bowling. Go play an individual sport. Because guess who you can point the finger at then? You got to look in the mirror.
Yeah.
That's one thing in some ways that's a good thing. Some ways it's a bad thing. If you are a team player, see, I was on team sports, and I knew my role, and other guys didn't know their roles. And sometimes guys were cancers on our team, and sometimes guys fit in their roles perfectly. But I also look forward to when I played tennis because I knew that because one player on my team isn't paying attention to the offensive out-of-bounds plays we're running could cost us a game or didn't practice as much as I did, which hurt the team even though he had so much more talent than I did.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that when I played tennis, I'd play my team sport in basketball or baseball or whatever, but when I played tennis, it was all about what I made out of it. Yeah, I had to beat my opponent. I had to play an opponent in singles in tennis. But I put in the work. It was all about me doing what I needed to do to get better as a tennis player, and that worked out to my advantage, and I was a successful tennis player in high school and played in college for a couple of years. So I like having tennis as an option or golf or an individual sport to go along with a team sport. I would highly recommend every athlete out there play both. Play an individual sport, play a team sport. LeBron's absolutely right. If you can't handle your role on a team or you want to rock the boat, you think you should be the star player, as he just pointed out, there are some really good players in the NBA who don't get to play a lot. There's backup quarterbacks in the National Football League that could be starters tomorrow, that could be maybe Hall of Famers, but maybe never get that chance until Drew Bledsoe gets hurt. Tom Brady steps in. Trent Green gets hurt. Kurt Warner steps in. You never know. So he's saying know your role. It's part of being a team. You have to sacrifice for the betterment of the team, the common goal. If you don't like it, go play tennis. You don't like your role on the team? Go play golf. Then you'll have your role. It'll be what you make of it. I think he's absolutely dead on 100,000% correct that you have to understand your role on a team. Not everybody can be the star. And if you can't accept your role, as he says, bleep it. Go play tennis. Go play golf. Go be a video gamer. You know, do something that's about you. Because if you're on a team and you want to be the star and you think you should be the star, even though deep down you know you're not the star, then you've made it all about you anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So why not go ahead and make it all about you and do an individual sport? Which is not a slam on tennis or golf at all, or bowling or any other thing, or wrestling, which is, there's a team concept, I get it, but you're still individual trying to win a state championship. It makes sense.
Yeah, and you know, every one of those sports that you mentioned, except for maybe bowling, unless you're at a college team or high school, there are high school and college bowling teams, but you know, there's a team concept to everything that you should do.
There's world team tennis, by the way.
Yeah, and tennis, you know, we played on a team in tennis. I mean, we did our thing individually, but we loved getting that medal if we could for the team, too.
Right.
You know, you loved getting a trophy if you could at state for a team, too. And I think you guys did that a couple times, if I remember right.
We got
third place, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess once for you, and my brother did it a couple times because he was a freshman and junior. You got a team trophy in tennis, you know, and so that's what you focus on. You focus on yourself, obviously. You want to do great.
Right.
But also, if you can get that team thing, that's perfect. But you're still playing an individual sport.
Sure.
So you got to focus on what's in your mind and what you're doing. Same with wrestling. You know, you want to get that team trophy if you can't go out to state.
Sure.
But again, you're focusing on what you need to do personally because you have to do that. If the team's going to succeed, you have to succeed individually. I can't put this on this guy that got turned around and put on his back when he shouldn't have and got pinned if I didn't win my match.
That's right.
You know what I mean? That's still on me. You know, if I lose and we lose the points because he got pinned and he shouldn't have, well, I didn't win. Maybe if I would have won, we would have got the points we needed.
So take care of my job first.
Yeah, exactly. You're still in your individual mindset there. Track and field will be the same thing, unless you're on a relay team.
Right.
You know, obviously that's a little bit different aspect of it, but track would be the same. We would, field events, all that. It's about what I need to do individually, even if I am still fighting for a team championship. I got to be my best individually.
Absolutely.
And I got to focus on me, because if I'm not focused on me, then the team's going to hurt there too. So focus on yourself, and those are those sports that you do that in. Like I say, I mean, yeah, you know, I think some people would thrive in that kind of situation better than they would in a team sport.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people like to go out there and say, hey, I can control this. Like you said, you know, I can't control a guy that I'm not trying to downgrade on my team, but I know he didn't work as hard as I did, and he made a mistake. I can't control what he does on a team. And I can control the mistakes that are made when I'm by myself.
Maybe T.O., Dwight Howard, Carmelo Anthony would have been better off playing individual sport.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on.
One-on-one league.
Yes. Moving on. The Ohio State scandal continues to develop. I know you guys, I'm sure, covered this last week while I was on vacation, but there's new information that came out Friday after your show. Urban Meyer making a statement on Twitter, of all places, to the Buckeye Nation. Before we get to that, let's go back to July 24th. July 23rd, Zach Smith, wide receivers coach of Ohio State, was dismissed from Urban Meyer's staff. He's the grandson of legendary head coach Ohio State Earl Bruce, which I think should be pointed out here. I think he is treated differently because of his heritage and the lineage with the university. So the day after he was dismissed, Urban Meyer at Big Ten Media Days was asked about Zach Smith's dismissal as wide receivers coach at Ohio State University. Listen very carefully to what Urban Meyer said on July 24th.
Well, I am going to address the 2009 because I've been asked about that. 2009, Zach was an intern, a very young couple, as I do any time that I imagine most coaches or people in leadership positions. You receive a phone call, first thing you do is tell your boss, let the experts do their jobs. We're certainly not going to investigate. It came back to me that what was reported wasn't actually what happened, and so Shelly and I actually both got involved because of our relationship with that family and advised for counseling and wanted to help as we move forward. 2015, I got a text late last night that something happened in 2015 and there was nothing. Unless, once again, there's nothing. You know, once again, I don't know who creates a story like that. And then this recent one was, you know, you press pause. It's something our team lives by, E plus R equals O. You get an event. You press pause, get your mind right, and step up. Press pause to gather information, get your mind right to gather energy, and then step up to do the right thing. That's the position that I hold, and that's why we did that.
Okay, if you don't know the background, Zach Smith, his ex-wife, they're now divorced. There was an incident in 2009 of a domestic abuse or incident between him and his wife, and another one in 2015. But Urban Meyer knew nothing about 2015, according to his own words, and went as far to say, I don't know who creates a story like that. A week later, Urban Meyer sends out a statement to Ohio State Buckeye Nation. He says, Dear Buckeye Nation, my heart is heavy today as I witnessed the toll that events of the past week have taken on the Buckeye family and the university community that I love so dearly. When I stand before the 105 young men in our football program and talk about core values and doing the right thing and respecting women, it's not lip service. I genuinely believe that we have an obligation to help develop the young men in our charge into positive change agents, and that responsibility rests with me. Over the past several days, I have been portrayed as being indifferent to domestic violence and as someone who did not take appropriate actions when warranted. While over three decades of coaching, I've learned to ignore how others define me. I do feel it necessary to share the truth with the Buckeye family. Here's the truth. While at the University of Florida and now at the Ohio State University, I have always followed proper reporting protocols and procedures when I've learned of an incident involving a student athlete, coach, or member of our staff by elevating the issues to the proper channels. And I did so regarding the Zach Smith incident in 2015. Whoa, wait a minute. He just said at Big Ten Media Days that was a story that was created. I don't know who's creating the story. Should I play back the audio cut? But now, a week later, he suddenly remembers the incident in 2015. He says, I take that responsibility very seriously, and any suggestion to the contrary is simply false. Well, you've kind of created that narrative, Coach Meyer, by your lies the week before. But how can he explain away his lie, right? He says, the power of what I say and how I say it, especially regarding sensitive and serious domestic issues, has never been more evident than now. My words, whether in a reply to a reporter's question or in addressing a personnel issue, must be clear, compassionate, and most of all, completely accurate. Unfortunately, at Big Ten Media Days on July 24th, I failed on many of these fronts. My intention was not to say anything inaccurate or misleading. However, I was not adequately prepared to discuss these sensitive personnel issues with the media, and I apologize for the way I handled those questions. I understand that there are more questions to be answered, and I look forward to doing just that with the independent investigators retained by the university, and I will cooperate fully with them. At the appropriate time, I will also address the questions and speculation in public forum, but for now, out of respect for the ongoing inquiry, I will refrain at this time. Please know that the truth is the ultimate power, and I am confident that I took appropriate action. As I stated above, I deeply regret if I failed in my words. As a son of an amazing woman and the husband to another, and as a father of two incredible young women, those who know me best know the admiration and respect I have for all women. Our core values are just that, values that do not ever waver. I ask that you continue to support the incredible coaches and student athletes in our program, and I look forward to rejoining them soon. Sincerely, Urban Meyer. Okay, couple things. He basically is throwing his administration or athletic director under the bus, saying, I passed the buck, I sent it to the proper channels.
Which seems like every coach likes to
yes.
do.
Yes, uh-huh. sure, that's convenient. Like that's
I
convenient.
I did this, Joe Paterno. I did this when I was supposed to.
Right. But
Art
if you
Bryles,
had,
I did this when I was supposed
but
to.
If you had high ethical standards and morals, perhaps you would have not even went that far and just well. Dismissed the guy. I have a theory. I have a theory Zach Smith has dirt on Urban Meyer. I bet you he does. The coaches hang together. They drink together. In fact, they had a big coaches drinking night party. And later that night, he had an incident with his wife. And it was, that was 2009, I believe it was, when he was an intern at Florida. And she wanted to press charges. The wife did. What happened? The other coaches said, oh, you're going to ruin his career. You know, no, he was just drunk. It just was a one-time thing. You know, that happens with all abusers. That's usually the cop-out.
Well,
oh,
yeah.
I just lost my cool once. It's just a one-time thing. It'll never happen again, baby. I love you. No. That's not a good sign. Not a good sign. Zach Smith hasn't denied that he's got an altercation with his wife. He said, basically, oh, well, you know, in self-defense, or we had a violent relationship. I haven't heard him apologize publicly to his wife. Have you?
I have not.
Or ex-wife. The last thing Urban Meyer says here at the end really irritates me. He says, as I stated above, I deeply regret if I failed in my words. Here's the part that stands out to me. As the son of an amazing woman and the husband to another amazing woman, and as a father of two incredible young women, those who know me best know the admiration and respect I have for all women. It's a pretty lengthy statement by Coach Meyer. Not once does he say anything about Zach Smith's wife, does he? He cares so much about women, he doesn't even take the time to say, I feel for Courtney Smith. That's how much he cares yeah. about her. She's a woman. Isn't that all lip service?
Oh, every last bit of it is. It's you're trying
Come
to save
on.
Face. That's what everybody does in that situation. Urban Meyer's no different
no,
than anybody else that's
he's
been,
not.
You know, an accomplice or whatever you want to call him to doing these kind of things. I mean, everybody says those things just to save their bacon. I mean, he's trying to save his job right now. That's the only reason he's
that's
saying
exactly
that.
Right. And the other line that stood out to me is when he says, I was not adequately prepared to discuss these sensitive personal issues with the media. This happened in 2015. You had 3 years to be prepared for it.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, Brett McMurphy, who was fired by ESPN, and it's ironic, he's being paid by ESPN all the way till August 12th. He chose not to get a job somewhere else because if he did, he would have not been paid by ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
So now ESPN, some people, buddies of his, have had him on ESPN.
Yeah, that's what's funny about all of this. He's showing up on all these shows. On I haven't watched him, but I've seen
he's
the website. Where
he's getting paid by ESPN,
like, oh, okay.
But he's not an active employee of ESPN.
Yeah.
So he goes to Facebook and Twitter, and he's going to have a new job with a company called Stadium on August 13th, and he gets paid all the way through August 12th from ESPN. ESPN's agreed to let him go, get nothing from him, pay him for 18 months. Because ESPN figured, well, he won't want to sit out of the sports industry for a year and a half. He'll go get another job, and we'll save our money. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? Brett McMurphy played the game and said, I'm already getting paid for you for another year and a half. I can still do this stuff through social media. I'm technically not employed by a third party, and I can break. I'm doing your job. You paying people at ESPN that you replaced me with or didn't replace me with, I'm doing all this stuff without you even helping me.
Yeah,
it's kind of ironic. But Brett McMurphy had a very interesting comment, I thought, that he put on Twitter. He said, let me get this straight, Urban Meyer. In a matter of seconds, you can come up with a way to convert a fourth and one in double overtime to beat Michigan, yet you can't adequately be prepared to take questions at Big Ten Media Day about an incident that happened 3 years ago. Here's what I think happened. First of all, Urban Meyer wasn't prepared for the question. Then he was thinking, oh, God, how does Ohio State want me to answer this question? So then he panicked and denied it, and then he's talked too much and said, I don't know who's creating a story like this, which was really the line that stood out to me.
That's what buries him.
Yeah, I think so.
In the public opinion.
If he would just have said, you know what, I really can't comment on that right now, that would have been the easiest way to handle that.
Yeah.
I just really can't talk about that right now. Someday we will. By the way, Brecken Murphy didn't, like, he used the Public Records Act. That anybody in America could have done. But ESPN and Fox and all of these sports organizations, an unemployed sports guy who broke the story of Scott Frost going to Nebraska, by the way, which, of course, a lot of people thought it was going to happen.
Yeah.
But he had the story first when it was official. And now he has the whole thing that could bring down Urban Meyer and mess up the football program at Ohio State is a guy that's unemployed. He's doing a better job than people that are getting paid. If I'm ESPN and Fox, I'm going, why are we paying all you people this money? It's Public Records Act. He had to go, what, to the state of Florida and Ohio and Texas or something? That's all he had to do is request it. That's all he did. He requested that information. He didn't, like, reinvent the wheel, Brett McMurphy.
No.
It's called journalism. It's called investigative reporting. And once he added two and two together, like, whoa, Urban Meyer knew about this. Then it became a huge story. Lost in this whole thing is that a woman was physically abused by her husband. And that's the thing that really bothers me, but yet that's how our society rolls. We forget about the actual victim in this whole thing. There are some people at Ohio State that love him as a football coach so much because they love their football program. They don't care who gets killed, hurt, raped, murdered, assaulted. They just want to win football games. There's people in the fan bases of every school that feel that way. But if it was their daughter that was abused, they'd think differently, wouldn't they?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, of course. So they're going out making it out like Urban Meyer's the victim. How's Urban Meyer the victim? Urban Meyer lied in front of the media on July 24th, and about a week later contradicts everything he said and says he wasn't adequately prepared to discuss it. You seem to be prepared when you gave your answer. If you weren't prepared at that time, why would you? You're a smart guy. Why would you keep talking about something you're not prepared for? Why wouldn't you just been like, I can't talk about that right now?
That's the easiest way.
That's all he had to do.
Like that. I'm not at liberty to discuss that right now. It's not about me. Like, that's the thing, too.
He made his bed. He's got to lie in it. How's Urban Meyer a victim? The victim is the woman beaten by her husband.
Yeah.
And it's not a—I mean, here's the other one. So Zach Smith comes out. He has an interview on ESPN. And he doesn't admit to—he admits, like, oh, self-defense, this or that, whatever else. And then Brett McMurphy puts this on Twitter because he has the text messages that she kept, which was smart on her part.
Mm-hmm.
Zach Smith told ESPN affiliate 105.7 The Zone he never abused Courtney, his ex-wife. Brett McMurphy posts on Twitter a text exchange between Zach and his ex-wife Courtney when they were married, when he admits and apologizes for strangling his wife on a Punta Cana trip in March of 2015 and again in April. Here's the exchange. The wife says, think about the past. Think back to the cheating, the lies, and picking me up by my neck, strangling me in Punta Cana and at our place in April. The abuse got worse because you couldn't stand me catching you in your lies. He responds, I know. She says, now you continue your lies. He responds, I am so sorry. When people make mistakes, the reason they become bigger things is they continue to bury themselves. This is self-inflicted by Zach Smith. This is self-inflicted by Urban Meyer and maybe even by the University of Ohio State. They have a 14-day investigation. That's right. In 14 days, they're going to have this investigation. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm be willing to bet Urban Meyer keeps his job.
Oh, I think he will.
Because if he hasn't lost it already, why is he going to lose it in a week or two?
Yeah.
The victim is not Urban Meyer. The victim is not Ohio State football. The victim is not poor Zach Smith, the grandson of legendary coach Earl Bruce. The victim is the woman that was beaten by her husband. Why isn't that the story? Because you don't know Courtney Smith. You don't know Zach Smith. But you know Urban Meyer. And thus, the story becomes all about Urban Meyer, and he lied. Listen, what Urban Meyer did is nothing. Nothing compared to what Zach Smith did. Urban Meyer can lie 10 or 15 times to the media in 5 minutes and clearly contradict himself the next day. That's still not as bad because, as far as I know, Urban Meyer didn't beat his wife. Didn't strangle his wife.
Yeah.
The victim is not Urban Meyer. It's not Zach Smith. It's not Ohio State football. It is the woman that was abused. That's the victim. Is there more to the story? I would guess there probably is. Was she the greatest person to deal with? Maybe not. Maybe she knew how to push his buttons. Maybe she baited him into it a little bit. But the fact that you could be baited into that tells you what kind of person you are. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's not a good look when a guy that is paid by, what, probably state taxpayer money to an extent for his salary, gets paid a lot of money to be the head coach of one of the most famous college football programs in all of America, lies to the media, and then basically says, well, I did the proper reporting protocols, and that's what I did in Florida, and that's what I did at Ohio State. He basically is throwing his AD and the higher-ups under the bus, saying, I did my part. Whatever happened to morals? Whatever happened to ethical standards? And what kind of example is Urban Meyer and Zach Smith, who was allowed to coach for at least, what, 9 years after his first incident in 2009 when he beat his wife or got into an altercation? Those are people leading 18, 19, 20, 21, 22-year-old young men. Are those the people that should be the leaders of your son if he goes to play football at Ohio State? And I'm going to say this right now. This isn't just an isolated case. I would be willing to bet you this happens at a lot of college institutions in regards to the coaches lie and lie and lie to keep their job, to keep living a lavish lifestyle. And the other weird part of this whole situation is that his wife, Urban Meyer's wife, is caught in this because she actually had conversations with Courtney Smith and in one exchange says, he scares me, referring to her ex-husband. But not enough to make a stand and tell Urban, Urban, we've got plenty of money. Do the right thing, honey. Or maybe she did have that conversation and he refused to do it. It comes down to, in a nutshell, it comes down to money. It comes down to keeping your job at all costs. And the statement by Urban Meyer is lip service.
Yeah, you can't debate that. If he said what he said at Media Day and then he comes back and says this, he's just trying to save face. That's all it is.
Yes.
And that's part of all what we're talking about is it's about money, sure. It's about keeping your job and all that, but it's also about not having your character defamed because you're trying not to have people see you in that kind of light. You want to be squeaky clean. You want to try to say that I had nothing to do with it. So then when he did have something, you didn't have anything to do with it, but you covered it up. Basically,
sure.
you didn't let people know about it and let it come out. Well, then you're kind of just trying to save yourself from the humiliation of what that brings once people find out you did know about it and didn't do anything about it. You know, every situation like this for me comes back to Penn State and what Joe Paterno said. He said kind of the same things. Mm-hmm. You know, I reported it to the people I needed it to report it to. Okay, so you did what you feel is the right thing legally.
You did the minimum.
How do you let Jerry Sandusky keep his job after you know all that?
Right.
Now it's how do you let Zach Smith stay in his job after you know all that, after you've already seen what happens to guys like Ray Rice, you know, who's the poster child for this, what we're talking about, mm-hmm. for domestic abuse on women. After you've already seen what happened to Ray Rice and you've seen what happened to guys in the NFL that have been, convicted of this or even just allegations with some of these people, after you've seen all that, how do you just, like, keep it under wraps and not at least try to see what's actually going on there? Does this guy need to be off of my staff right now? Is it bad enough where I need to just get rid of him? And I don't think any coaches even think that way, because they're like, I didn't do it. It's not my issue. Mm-hmm. I didn't do it. I reported it to the people I need to report it to. I did my job. Mm-hmm. The rest of it, I don't care about. It's not me. It's not my decision to make. And they can hide behind the fact that, well, I'm not employing Zach Smith. I'm not employing Jerry Sandusky. The university is. So then it gets thrown on the university in the end. They're the ones that have to deal with it. And Penn State dealt with it hard. And Ohio State will deal with this, not as hard as Penn State. It's not as big of a spectrum as many people involved, obviously. But, one is too many. There's no question about that. But, this is just a way to try to turn it back and say, you did the right thing. It's on Ohio State right now. It's not on me.
Does Urban Meyer let the university pick his coaches his staff?
No, he doesn't.
That's funny.
Exactly.
That's funny. So let me get this right. As a head coach of the Ohio State University, you don't rely on the university to tell you who to hire. You pick your guys, and then they go ahead and pay them. But then all of a sudden, you defer to them on who's going to be fired?
Yeah.
That's very convenient. Very convenient. Bregman Murphy reports, Ohio State announces Urban Meyer's investigation will be completed within 14 days. Ohio State is committed to a thorough and complete investigation. We look forward to sharing the results of this investigation and any action the university may take. So, stay tuned. Once again, I want to stress it one last time. If you think Urban Meyer is the victim of this situation, you think Ohio State football is a victim of a smear campaign, if you somehow think Zach Smith is a victim of this thing, I don't want to hang out with you. 10:10 is our time. 81 degrees our temperature. You're not thinking about it objectively. You're only worried about winning football games, and there is more to life than winning a football game. And if that was your daughter, your mom, your grandma, your aunt, your ex-wife, sister, whatever it might be, your niece, your granddaughter, I could go on, you'd have to ask yourself, would you still feel the same way? And football is more important, winning a football game and keeping a coach on, or keeping an assistant coach who's been involved in multiple instances with his wife or next wife. You'd be cool with that? God, man, it's called the golden rule, people. And I don't think there's many people around here that think too much of Zach Smith, Ohio State football, or Urban Meyer. But there are a lot of people in Columbus, Ohio, that somehow conveniently can wear those Buckeye-colored glasses and think, poor Urban, his words are being taken out of context. No, they're not taken out of context. I just played the audio for you. Come on, you're better than that. You're better than that.